Welcome everyone, light beings, to the Womb of Light Assembly. This, when the light is permeating and circulating freely, it manifests as kindness, compassion, diligence, devotion, selflessness, and non-defensiveness. Here's a story from the old days in China about one way it looks when the light's circulating freely. Once upon a time, there was a Tenzo named Fa Yuan, and his teacher, the abbot of that temple, was quite strict. So there's also a story about when Fa Yuan first came to that temple and was sitting in Tongario waiting to be admitted. The teacher came out and poured freezing water on him and said, "Get out of here." And he said, I came 1,000 miles to practice with you. I'm not going to leave because of some cold water." So he was allowed to stay, but that's the kind of guy this abbot was. And so, as you can see, that's kind of like the opposite of advertising a practice place. Yeah, exactly. He was not trying to attract people to come. And so they probably didn't have many donors either. So they had very meager food in the kitchen storehouse, and the monks were always going hungry. And one day the abbot went into town and was going to be gone during the noon meal. So Fa Yuan, the Tenzo, stole the key to the temple storehouse, and to make a nice meal for the monks, he took some like nice flour. You might think, well, he took like all the cake and chocolate and stuff. He just took some flour. We have to wonder what they were eating otherwise. So he kind of stole this flour because he knew the abbot. It was locked in the storehouse for special occasions. They had flour. So he took this flour and made a special kind of gruel cereal for those monks, which they thoroughly enjoyed. And just as they were finishing their delightful meal, the abbot returned from town a little bit earlier than expected, and saw how happy the monks were, and saw that they were eating this precious flour gruel. And waited till the assembly left the hall, and Fa Yuan saw the abbot standing there waiting for him to come out, and just immediately went up and said, instead of saying, "Well, they were really hungry, I just, you know, I'm sorry," he just went up to the abbot and said, "Please punish me. I stole the flour from the temple storehouse." Now, I guess that was kind of the way things were at this temple, is that the Tenzo had to steal the key to the temple food supplies. Seems kind of weird in itself, right? But maybe the abbot kept the key to the special flower. So Tenzo said, "Yes, I did this. He didn't say it, but we can sense that he loved this assembly and he wanted to make a special gift, and the teacher was too strict to do it, so he just did it, knowing he might get in trouble. Please punish me." So the abbot gave him 30 blows with a stick and expelled him from the temple. Pretty extreme for offering some flour. So Fa Yuan graciously, without defending himself, started to pack his things and go. And the abbot said, well, also, besides leaving, please pay back the cost of that flower. And poor monk Fa Yuan, who had nothing but his robes and bowl, went into town and had to sell his robe and bowl to gather the money to pay back the flower, which he, you know, without complaint did. And somehow then begged for another robe and bowl so he could sustain himself. And there was a little like kind of guest house owned by the temple outside the outside of the monastery at the bottom of the hill, and so as it was run by other supporters of this temple, and so Fa Yuan, who couldn't go back to talk to the teacher, begged his other students to say, will he please, I just want to practice with him. Will he please let me back and to practice in the temple? And they would go convey the word, and the teacher said, no, he can't come back. And then he said, well, if I can't come back, can I at least come to Dokusan? Because I want to clarify the Dharma with this teacher. And the teacher said, no, you can't come to Dokusan. He never complained. And the people running the guest house were like, that teacher is just a little bit strict. You know, you can stay here. We love you. You're a kind-hearted monk. And so he stayed there. And one time Fa Yuan found out that he was staying in the temple guest house and said, are you staying in the temple guest house without paying? Fa Yuan said, yes, I have been. I'm so sorry. I didn't know. They invited me to. And he said, even if they invited you to, please pay back the funds for all the days that you stayed here. So he went out with his bowl and begged in town until he could pay back the lodging fees. Always wanted to stay. He didn't say, this teacher's insane, I'm out of here. He was like, I just want to clarify Dharma with this teacher. And one day Fa Yuan was in town again, and the abbot was in town, and he saw Fa Yuan begging to pay back the last days of his stay in the guest house, and he said, this is one diligent, non-defensive monk. He has the total spirit of Zen, so come on back and practice in the assembly. Dogen tells this story and praises the Tenzo Fa Yuan. So I tell that story partly because I was reminded of that story when something like a kind of a present-day version of it happened the other day at Warm Jewel Temple. Not exactly like this, but I thought it should be told it should be recorded for the future records. So one day at Warm Jewel Temple, it was a rainy day, and during the Dharma talk, a kind soul, one of our homeless community, knocked on the door of the hall during the Dharma talk, as sometimes they have in past sessions too. And why of all times this is somebody I'd never seen before. Why would they show up during the Dharma talk in Sashin? So I just assumed that that in past world systems at this temple, that person was probably the past abbot of this temple and was coming for a turning word. And so he came inside in the back of the hall. I don't know if that's true. And I just figured, why else would he come? And the kind, you know, when knock came on the door, the Eno went out, and you know, some, I don't know exactly all the details of the story, so I might be interpreting some, but as I understood it, he talked to this person, said that there's the radiant light is being expounded in the hall. If you'd like to come receive that, you're welcome to. And so he came in and sat down, and the Dharma talk continued, and maybe at some point like a word was turned for him, and he started expressing different like mudras spontaneously. The light was like kind of like manifesting as different mudras, and then he got up and started kind of wandering around the hall looking at things, and that's when the Eno very kindly helped him to find the door which he was probably looking for, and I think it was a nice visit from this past abbot, and then the Eno disappeared with him outside for a while, and I just continued to talk. And then later I heard from the Eno that something like he saw all these shoes on the shoe rack and said, is it okay if I take one of these pairs of shoes? And it looks like there's lots of them. And the Eno said, well, actually, they're all individually kind of claimed. I'm so sorry, but I can offer you my socks. So very kindly, the Eno offered his own socks to this fellow. And also said, I can offer you some food from the kitchen. And so he went in the fridge and found some leftovers and offered some food. And then that past abbot was received by the assembly, got to hear some Dharma, got some socks and food, and went on his way. How beautiful that such a thing can happen at Warm Jewels Temple. And then, later, the Tenzo, who was meanwhile attending the Dharma talk during this time, instead of, she wasn't in the kitchen, when she found out that the food had been, should we say, stolen from the Tenzo's refrigerator, the Eno was maybe kind of scolded a little bit. I don't know exactly how, probably quite kindly, but the Tenzo herself told me this, not the Eno. The Eno didn't say, can you believe I was scolded by the Tenzo for giving someone some food? But the Tenzo told me, she said, I would have liked to give him food too, but I had plans for that particular food, and this he could have asked, even though I was in the Dharma talk. But as I understood it, that the Eno did not defend himself. He just received that instruction to ask next time. And when I heard all the bits and pieces of the story, the joy arose in my heart for how the light can manifest just like in the old days. Today is Buddha's birthday, April 8th. And as you may have heard, when that baby Buddha was born, he immediately stood up, upright on the ground, and pointed up with one hand to all vast space and pointed down with the other hand to the ground and everything, everywhere he pointed to and said, in the heavens above and on the earth below, I alone am the honored one. And the teaching of his whole lifetime was complete at that moment. But since not everybody understood, he had to then do the whole like Buddha thing and, you know, grow older and sit under the Bodhi tree and deal with Mara and turn the Dharma wheel some more. And finally enter parinirvana. But I say that his teaching was complete with this first statement. In the heavens above and on the earth below, basically everywhere throughout space and time, I alone am the Buddha, the awakened one. This I, we also call radiant light. The inconceivable, ever-present radiant light called I, our true self. And there's no other. I alone am the Buddha. There's no other Buddha but me. And this I manifests as all beings in the 10 directions and 3 times. Everything, not only all sentient beings, but rocks, tiles, walls, pebbles, are I alone. This self, true self. So, partly because people didn't get that at first. Then, later, when the Buddha got older, he had to teach about no self. See, his first teaching was that I alone, meaning all of you, are truly I alone, and we are all taking part in this Buddha nature. So here's one of the stranger metaphors from the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, one of the great sutras usually listed along with the Great Perfect Wisdom Sutra, the Flower Ornament Sutra, and the Lotus Sutra. The Mahayana Parinirvana Sutra is one of the central Mahayana sutras, and it's underrated these days, I say. You maybe have never heard of this Mahaparinirvana Sutra. It's a Buddha nature sutra. And chapter 12 is called the Tathagata nature, the Buddha nature. And this metaphor I had heard before, and only recently did this metaphor strike me as, oh, how sweet and beautiful an expression of this Buddha nature and what's going on here. So here's what the sutra says, and first Buddha teaches the metaphor and then he kind of explains it, but maybe not so clearly. So this is, I'll add into the metaphor what Buddha describes. So, first of all, Kashyapa, Mahakashyapa, asked the Buddha, "World Honored One, is there any self anywhere in all of the universe?" And the Buddha said, "Good son, the Tathagata treasury, or the Tathagata garba, is the self." Tathagata garba is another name for Buddha nature. "The Tathagata garba is the self. All sentient beings completely have or are Buddha nature. And this is precisely the self. And this is the line, the famous line that Dogen bases his great essay called Buddha Nature, Busho, on this line. Is it, have the Chinese here is exactly what Dogen quotes. Isai shujo shitsu busho. All sentient beings, in their entirety, or all-inclusively, have Buddha nature, and this U, Dogen, turns it, you can read U in Chinese as either have or be. All sentient beings completely are Buddha nature. Dogen doesn't quote the rest of the sentence, which is, this is precisely the self, the Atman. And the Buddha goes on, "This self has from the beginning been constantly covered by innumerable obscurations, and therefore sentient beings are unable to see it." And then here's the metaphor. "Good son, good disciple of Buddha, suppose that a woman gives birth to a child who falls ill while still a baby. Greatly worried, she searches out a skillful doctor, and the skillful doctor arrives and makes some medicine, some different types of medicine for the child to take." And so this is, I'm gonna try to describe this metaphor here, is that the medicine, The child is us. Child is all sentient beings. And we're born from the mother of Buddha nature. And then we become sick. And so we need some medicine. And these various kinds of medicines are like, let go of what you're attached to. All conditioned things are, impermanent and not worthy of grasping. And just calm down, settle, and be present. These are the kinds of medicines. And then the doctor tells the woman, "After your child has taken these medicines, don't give her any milk for a little while. Don't breastfeed this child until the medicine has been digested, and then you can once again nourish your child with your breast milk." Follow so far? In other words, there's something about these medicines, if you mix them with milk, they become inactive. So just temporarily, just let them really get into this medicine, or just, looking at their attachments and so on. And what mother thinks, well, how can I keep the baby from taking my Buddha nature milk, and because the baby's just going to want to come to my breast. So that she takes some bitter ointment, and the taste's really bitter, and rubs it on her breast, on her nipple, so that the baby, when coming to drink, smells this bitter taste and doesn't want to drink the milk. Following so far? So this bitter ointment, the Buddha later says, is the teaching of anatman, no self. This is a kind of bizarre metaphor. Took me a while for it to really appreciate this metaphor. So, this Buddha nature, true self, mother, that the baby naturally is drawn to, because it is the baby's self, temporarily to take this medicine of like, you gotta be, get kind of disillusioned with all these conditioned things that we're attached to. So we're gonna, in a way, stay away from this true self teaching temporarily, because you're just gonna like make it into something to attach to. So temporarily we're gonna like put this bitter ointment on this nipple, and the bitter ointment is called the teaching of no self. It's kind of bitter, and it kind of blocks this nourishing milk of true self. You follow? And so she does this. She puts this on her breast with the bitter ointment, and even tells the child, "There's poison on my breast. Don't drink this milk." And the child becomes thirsty. She reaches for her mother's breast, but smelling this bitter, poisonous smell, she stays away. But when the medicine, original medicine the doctor prescribed, has been digested, and the baby is practiced with being like calming down, being settled, not grasping at everything, then the mother washes off her breasts and returns to the child. And at this time, though the child is hungry and thirsty, the child remembers this bitter taste from before and doesn't come near. "I'm not going near that true self, Buddha nature, because all I know is no self." The mother says again, she explains, "This was just a skillful means. Because you had taken that medicine, I put this bitter taste on my breast. But now that the medicine is digested, I washed it off. You can come drink my milk without fear of suffering." Hearing these things, the child slowly returns and drinks the nectar-like milk of Buddha nature, the true self. Strange one, huh? Yes.
Suzuki Roshi, in one of those books, either about her life or just on his Dharma talks, he talks sometimes about Zazen being like at your mother's breast. I wonder if he's referring to this.
Maybe. Yeah. This nurturing milk of life that's, in a way, the metaphor has lots of nice qualities. It's like, it's what the baby first naturally goes to. And then the baby starts to become sick. We might say, first babies just identify with the true self of radiant light. And then, as they get older, they start to become sick with the grasping at impermanent illusory things, and so they need some Dharma medicine to like let go of these things, and grasping at the self like this might be misinterpreted as a kind of like some graspable entity, some sort of like vast ego self, So then the doctor, with skillful means, is just until we get really settled, the teaching of no self is going to be actually really helpful here, to digest this medicine of becoming disillusioned with all impermanent, dissatisfying, conditioned things. So it's like we're going to use the teaching of no self to keep us away from self. And the teaching of no self is that these things we think are ourself, like this impermanent body and impermanent feelings and impermanent conceptions and impermanent karmic tendencies and impermanent dualistic consciousness, these are not myself. So that's this bitter medicine. These things are not myself. It's good, very good, skillful teaching. And then once you've gotten these things are not myself, then the baby can ask, well, what is myself? And then come back to the nourishing milk of Dharma. This machine, we're looking at absorption in the womb of light, the Kōmyōzō-zamai, or the treasury of radiant light, Samadhi, by Ko-un Ejo, Dogen's disciple. Ejo asks, well, how is it that sentient beings and Buddhas are different? And he says, those who erroneously grasp at the separate self do not trust in the light, though they are within it. So they arbitrarily make themselves float and sink in birth and death. Those are sentient beings. Whereas Buddhas are those who see through to the light and are also in it, but realizing impartial, unhindered awareness of equality or universal knowing. So both sentient beings and Buddhas are in the light, but this is the difference between them. And then Ejo, throughout this long essay, well, these are just some highlights, but he exuberantly praises the light and expresses the wondrous reality of the treasury of radiant light. But just to keep things balanced, he also offers some, you know, maybe kind of bitter medicine, and just so we don't get carried away in our exuberance to this kind of this sort of admonishing sort of talk. And I'll skip, you know, lots of it because, you know, it's Buddha's birthday. But I think guttering through just a little bit. So here Ejo says, he's talking about the light of great wisdom that is everywhere, is our true self. But Ejo says, in spite of this, we think that it's a matter of loving this transitory, impermanent body, or being attached to this impermanent body, which is like dew on the grass, quickly evaporating, like a floating bubble. When it comes to the great light, that is your real body, your true body is great light, but you think that it's just an irrelevant discussion, and suppose that there must be something more grandiose than that. Thus, you waste your time talking about political conditions and the quality of alms food and so on, without any stable practice, reflecting consideration of how this idly passing life will end up. If you have any realization of trust and practice and actualization within this treasury of light, why would it be only about your own personal liberation anyway? It's not just about your own personal liberation. Trusting in this light will requite the four kindnesses above and provide benefit and sustenance for all sentient beings below. Mountains, rivers, and earth, your own body and others' bodies are all the radiant light of suchness, illumining everywhere endlessly. This is a nice point that this is not just about being freed from one's own suffering, but when trusting and actualizing the treasury of light, it requites the four kindnesses above. And this is in our meal chant when we say, this food is for the three treasures, for our teachers, family, parents, teachers, family,
all people,
and all beings in the six realms. That's one version of the six, of the four kindnesses. So we've been offered so much by our teachers, parents, family, and all beings, and we can give back this kindness. We naturally give back this kindness when actualizing the treasury of light. And Edu says, to actualize this treasury of light, it doesn't matter whether you're a monk or lay person, whether you're a beginner or experienced. It makes no difference whether you're sharp or dull, or how much learning or knowledge you have. None of this matters. This just points directly at the formless body of the essence of awareness, complete and bright, which is utterly unique and unmatched. The essence of awareness is Buddha nature. Complete brightness is a great radiant light. It's the formless silent light of your present illusory body. You could say this, the flesh and blood appearing body is this complete bright light. Therefore, an ancient worthy said, the whole body has no form, the whole world does not conceal it. Master Baijiang said, the radiant light shines alone, utterly free of sense faculties and objects, the essence manifests, real and eternal. It is not contained in words. The nature of mind is undefiled, originally complete and perfect in itself. Just let go of unreal, false objects of mind, and it naturally awakens to suchness. This radiant light is free of sense faculties and sense objects, and yet it manifests as sense faculties and sense objects. In the poem about Zazen called Acupuncture Needle of Zazen, our great teacher Hung Jir says that this Zazen, he describes Zazen as illuminating without facing objects. This is our Zazen, is just illuminating without facing objects. And then Dogen, commenting on this, says, this illumining does not mean some kind of spiritual illumination or ethereal, mystical kind of light. This illumination simply means without facing objects. This is a great line of Dogen. What is this illumination? So Hongzhe says, Zazen is illumination without facing objects. What is this illumination? And Dogen says, this illumination is simply without facing objects. That's what it is. It is never hidden throughout the world, and it does not emerge only when you break the world. Illumining does not change into the object, for the object itself is the illumining. The object itself is the illumination, which is another way of saying the flowers that we see are the knowing of them. The object itself is the illumination. Ajo says, trusting in this radiant light, abiding peacefully, imperturbable, is called the samadhi, which is the sovereign of samadhis. Zamai, oh zamai. It's called just wholeheartedly sitting. Shikantaza. Shikantaza is trusting in the radiant light. Or, as came up earlier in Sesshin, Shikantaza, as Suzuki Roshi says, is just to be yourself. Just being yourself is what we mean by just sitting. Being yourself. Yourself is the radiant light. Ungraspable, ineffable. When we look for it, it's dark and obscure. We can't ever grasp it as an object. And yet, it's undeniable. It's verifiable. Every moment, it lends itself to verification. By simply, knowing that we are aware right now, without the slightest doubt, we are aware right now, this is the verification. It's a non-conceptual, direct, and doubt-free verification. I am aware right now, but what is this awareness? I have no idea. It's totally ungraspable. But it's undeniable. And what is it that knows without a doubt that I am aware right now? Nothing other than the awareness itself knows. Therefore, the awareness verifies itself every moment. And by asking these questions that come in conceptual language, they can take us to the place of the light verifying itself, the place called right here, now, this self, our great mother and her nourishing milk. Andrew goes on to say, tell me. So this is there's a meditation instruction here. It's like, please, take this personally. Speaking to this assembly, but please take this question personally. Tell me, right now, whatever you're doing, and any other time too, as you defecate and urinate, even as you defecate and urinate, as you dress and eat, ultimately, whose experience is it? This question is like is a flow of Dharma milk directly from the breast of our compassionate mother, I say. Tell me, right now, as you sit and listen to a Dharma talk, ultimately, whose experience is it? This question is worth asking every moment for the rest of our life, I say. It's the same question in different words as what is it that's aware of me sitting here right now? And when we look for what that is, what is this light, Yunmen says? When you look for it, it's dark and obscure. What is this light? No one can answer. So Yunmen says, on their behalf and on behalf of the light, he says, the zendo, the kitchen, the refrigerator, the leftover food, the cake, the flowers, the homeless community, the cars, the children, the oryoki bowls, the stomach, spleen, lungs and heart, the eyeballs, ears, nose, tongue. Whose experience is it? And what, moreover, of the colors of the waters, the scenery of the mountains, the coming and going of heat and cold, the spring flowers, the autumn moon, thousands of changes, myriad transformations. What brings all this about? Truly, this is a face that is most wondrous. It is radiant light illuminating the 10 directions. It is samsara and nirvana are like last night's dream. It is being is non-being, non-being is being. If not realized thus, even if you speak of, I always abide on sacred vulture peak and every other dwelling place. It's a line from the Lotus Sutra, which is true. But if you speak of always abiding on sacred vulture peak and so on, it's just a false thing that we're just saying. It's just a fabricated discourse. Even if you hear of eternally silent light that's unborn and undying, I'd say that's only talk with no real meaning. If it's not realized thus. If the light's not verified and confirmed, which is readily a possibility at every moment, then if we veer off the direct verification even slightly, or add to the direct verification with a bunch of conceptual stuff to describe it, then it's just talk. Yesterday we talked about the there's a non conceptual, non-dual verification and confirmation of radiant light, in a way, happening all the time. The light's verifying itself, and by asking, for example, am I aware right now? The question takes us to the direct verification. We verify without any idea of, well, I guess I'm supposed to be aware. It's like, we're aware. It's like the easiest thing to verify in the universe. Whether we're sitting in a zendo or not, that might be a little harder to verify. But am I experiencing right now? Am I aware right now? That's the easiest thing to verify. And when that verification happens, we say, yes, of course, I'm aware. There's no even the slightest doubt about that. That's called, no doubt, it's called confirmation and verification. But then, what is this awareness that we've just verified? I have no idea. We cannot verify it as an object. We cannot verify it as an experience. It's a non-conceptual, non-dual verification that is accessible at every moment. And these questions take us to the place of verification called right here, right now. The question is, am I aware right now? Or the question, while defecating and urinating, whose experience is it? We have to ask sincerely. And if we look for something fancy and hidden, like multicolored light, then we're getting totally distracted from the simplicity and kind of in-our-faceness of this colorless light. Then Ajo says, all the students I see today are often influenced by false thinking and he's talking about Zen practitioners. They spend their lives polishing their concentration day and night, expecting to eventually see through to the light in this way. If we didn't just get like more and more concentrated and still, we'll eventually see the light. This is a good teaching for us in Sisshin. It must, of course I can't see it now, I'm totally distracted and I'm half asleep or I'm too, my mind's wandering. But this light isn't blocked by mind wandering. This light isn't blocked by distraction. It's the light that knows the distraction, right? It's the light that's, is the experiencing of every mental state under the sun. But I see, Ajo says, Zen students trying to polish themselves day and night, expecting to eventually see through to the light in this way. Again, some try to see the radiant, pure light by practicing concentration to get rid of random thoughts flying around, repeatedly trying to beat out the flaming fire, hoping to see the eternally silent light thereby. You know, understandable how we might think that would be the practice. And Ajo says, but if you think that the total non-arising of thought is right, then are wood, stones, and clods of earth right? They don't have any distracted thoughts. But is that the radiant light? In a way, of course. Clods of earth and stones are also expressions of the radiant light, but I think he's pointing out Don't try to just become like a rock or a stone with no thoughts arising. Thoughts are totally fine. Thoughts are radiant light expressing itself as the miracle of human thought. And then Edgyo gets into these Zen students who are looking for a seal of approval, and so they practice really diligently, and their thoughts quiet down, and they misunderstand this kind of silent state for the radiance of the light. They misconstrue this calmness and thought-free state to be the state where inside and outside become one, the original ground of the fundamental reality of the true self. And then they take this interpretation to Zen teachers who have no eyes, and they present this view. But since the teachers have no eyes, therefore they go along with the students and they give them worthless seals of approval and call them graduate students, finished with Zen study. So he's getting into it here, Edgyo. So now comes the finale, the beautiful finale. This is what we've been chanting this at evening service. I humbly say to people who are true students of the way, who have the same aspiration, do not cling to one device or one state. Do not rely on intellectual understanding or brilliance. Do not carry around what you learn in Zazen on your seat in the hall. Just cast body and mind into the great treasury of light without looking back. Sit grandly under the eaves without seeking enlightenment, without trying to get rid of delusion, without aversion to the arising of thoughts, and yet without fondly continuing thoughts either. If you don't continue thoughts, thoughts cannot arise by themselves. That's, I think, an interesting Zazen instruction, kind of profound, worth exploring in Zazen, as is everything said here. Like empty space, like a mass of fire, let your breathing flow naturally out and in. Sit decisively without getting involved in anything at all. Even if 84,000 random thoughts arise and cease, as long as one does not get involved with them, but lets go of them, then each thought will be the light of the spiritual power of wisdom. And it's not only while sitting. Every step is the walking of light, not engaging in subjective thinking, step after step. Thinking, I hear subjective thinking as thinking I am this limited self, and I, this body, mind, and thoughts and feelings bundle is walking. Without walking in that way, then every step is the walk of light. 24 hours a day, be like someone who is completely died, completely dead, utterly without the view of self or false imaginations. So this is one side, is like the grave death, like die to all our self-centered concerns. And then, nevertheless, even though it's like as if we're dead, this is now the other, this is kind of the side of coming back to life now. Be like someone completely dead. Nevertheless, the breath is going in and out in this dead person. The nature of hearing and the nature of feeling without conscious knowledge or subjective discrimination are silently shining radiant light in which body and mind are one suchness. Therefore, when called, there's an immediate response. The light is although it's it may seem that it's just like a dead person, it's actually immediately responds when called. This is Zen saying, there's a dragon howl in a withered tree, expresses this point. A dragon howl in a dead tree, yes. There's a dragon howl in a dead tree. Therefore, you respond when called. Even though it's sesshin and we're just dropping into total non-doing, when a knock is heard on the Zendo door during a Dharma talk, the Eno just gets up and opens it. It says, come in. This is the light in which the ordinary and holy, deluded and enlightened are one suchness. Even in the midst of activity, it's not hindered by activity. That's a radiant line. This light is in the midst of activity, but it's not hindered by activity. The forests and flowers, the grasses and leaves, people and animals, great and small, long and short, square and round, all appear at once without depending on the discrimination of your thoughts and will or intentions. Like, are we making all of this appear? It doesn't take any effort to make the birds call and the Zendo holding us. The light is so kindly and effortlessly expressing this incredibly beautiful and painful world for all of us. It's not even a miracle. It's like beyond a miracle. Is it not? This light. So all of this appears without any intention at all. This is manifest proof that the light is not obstructed by activity. It is empty luminosity spontaneously shining without exerting mental energy. This is a quote from the Song of the Trusting Mind. It's not in the section that we chant, but later in the song. And it's one of the most commonly quoted lines. Maybe we should just put a little appendix at the bottom of our chant, because it's one of my favorites too. You could translate it as, we're talking about the radiant light here. It is empty shining or radiant, self-illuminating without exerting any mental energy, without any effort. Or the empty luminosity illuminates itself without any effort whatsoever. It's a great line. It emphasizes this light is empty, meaning that when you look for it, you can't see it. It's totally ungraspable. But it's radiantly shining every moment as the kitchen and the Buddha hall and the main gate. And it's self-illuminating. It's illuminating itself. Awareness is verifying itself every moment without any effort on our part whatsoever.
Did you say that that's not a miracle?
It's beyond a miracle.
Oh, beyond a miracle.
Miracles to smaller word for this. Thank you. And the same line from the Song of the Trusting Mind was mentioned earlier in Sesshin, I think, when Menzan Zenji says, what is the Komyo Zozamai? He says, this treasury of light samadhi is another name for the Jijiyu Zamai, the self-fulfilling, self-enjoyment samadhi, which is another name for the Hokyo Zamai, the jewel mirror samadhi, which is another name for the Zamai Ozamai, the king of samadhi's samadhi, which is another name for Shikantaza, just wholehearted sitting, which is another name for Shinjin Datsuraku, which means dropping off body and mind dropped off, which is another name for
silent
illumination, which is another name for the essential function of all Buddhas and the functional essence of all ancestors, which is another name for illuminating without facing objects. Literally, Menzan goes through all of these great Zen sayings and he says, luckily, we don't have to distinguish like 20 different practices to do. They're all the same practice. And he says, now I will clarify the way to practice these samadhis, this one samadhi. This practice is simply to not obscure the radiant light of the self, the jikō, komyō. And then I think the next line is the same quote. It is empty, clear, and self-illuminating without any exertion of the mind's power. It all comes together as one, does it not? There's no, these Buddhism ancestors in our lineage seem to have no argument with each other about what this practice is, although it's expressed in infinite ways. Edgio goes on, the light has never had any place of abode, or this is the light of no abode. Even when Buddhas appear in the world, it does not appear in the world. Even though the Buddhas enter nirvana, this light does not enter nirvana. When you're born, the light is not born. When you die, the light does not die. It is not more in Buddhas and not less in ordinary sentient beings. It's not lost when we're confused and deluded, and it's not awakened when we're enlightened. It has no location, no appearance, and no name. It is the totality of everything. The Buddha Hall, the main gate, and City Hall, the library, and the post office. It cannot be grasped. It cannot be rejected. It cannot be attained. While unattainable, it is in effect throughout the entire body and the entire being. From the highest heaven above to the lowest hell below, it is thus completely clear, a wondrously inconceivable spiritual light. That's the section we've been chanting in the evenings, and you're welcome to take the copy from the back of the sutra book home with you. And then Edo, just to finish it off, he says, if you trust and accept this profound teaching, you do not need to ask anyone else whether it's true or false. It will be like meeting your own mother in the middle of a busy marketplace. When you see her in the crowd, you don't need, that kind of looks like my mother, but what do you think? Is that my mother? You don't have to ask your friend if that's your mother once you trust this light. Which is, you know, interesting. There's another essay that Dogen has called Jisho Zamai, which means self-verification samadhi, self-confirmation samadhi. And he dances in that essay with this issue of, well, if you just verify it yourself, then you shouldn't have to check with anybody else. But then he becomes very critical of these Zen ancestors in China who didn't have the approval or verification of another person, of another Zen teacher. This is what creates a lineage, right? But here the point is, truly, it would be like meeting your own mother in the middle of the marketplace. You can verify that your mother non-conceptually. You don't need, you just see her and you know it's her. Then he says, don't petition other teachers for a seal of approval. In Rinzai Zen, they have this term, Inka Shomei. Soto Zen, we're not so coarse as to give like seals of approval in exactly this way. Inka is seal of approval, and show is this show called confirmation, as in practice and confirmation or not to. And mei is another pronunciation of myo, komyo. So you could say verification of light, shomei. I think Dogen occasionally uses this term, shomei. But don't like try to just get some approval, and don't be eager to be given a prediction of Buddhahood and realize the fruition of final Buddhahood. Don't grasp at anything anymore, because you don't need to if we trust this light. Unconcerned even with those kind of highfalutin Zen kind of things, then why be concerned about, you know, making sure that you have good food and good clothing and good shelter and activities based on lust and emotional attachment and so on. I'd say, well, I don't need that Zen stuff, but like the conventional stuff. He's like, well, more like the Zen stuff. If you don't need that, then you don't need anything particular, because we will be sustained. Our mother will always take good care of us, will she not? If we serve the light, earlier in Sesshin we talked about that how Shakyamuni, Buddha, and Maitreya are servants of another. We can be servants of that other. And if we serve radiant light, then radiant light will take very good care of us. This is my trust. This absorption in the womb of light is from the very beginning the site at which all Buddhas realize the ocean of enlightenment. Therefore, it is sitting as Buddha and acting as Buddha, carried on in its utter simplicity. Those who are already children of Buddha should just sit in the sitting of Buddha. Don't sit in the sitting of hell beings, of the sitting of hungry ghosts, the sitting of the animal realm, the sitting of the jealous gods, the sitting of humans, or the sitting of celestial beings. Don't sit in the sitting of Shravakas or the sitting of Prajeka Buddhas. Simply just sit. In this way, don't waste time. This is called the enlightenment site, the Bodhi Mandala of the straightforward mind, absorption in the womb of light, of inconceivable liberation. The older translation from Tenshin Roshi, for some reason, skipped this last paragraph, but he put it in the published translation. it's too late. I'm sorry about this. But he says, this essay should not be shown to anybody but people who are in the school and have entered the room, which is a Zen way of saying received transmission in the lineage. So it's almost like he's kind of saying it's kind of like a secret teaching, actually. My only concern is that there should be no false and biased views. I think so. He's in a way talking to Zen teachers here. And this essay was written for Zen teachers. There should be no false and biased views, whether in one's own practice or in teaching others. So try not to become a cult leader or something like that.
So be careful.
Be careful.
I want to be about trusting this life and that you do it, take care of it.
Yeah, what do you think?
I don't think so. I know not, because I see it's not happening.
For you?
For anybody. You know, not for my sister, not for the Syrians, not for, you know, the world. But there must be some way to make that a meaningful statement.
Yeah.
We haven't done so yet. Not that
I think. I think for especially because it's just for those in the room. Here we are in the room. It's for us. It's for us. This instruction. So I think we should never apply this to Syrians or our brothers and sisters, even those in the room. I think we should apply it to us. So ourselves, and as practitioners. And to say, if I trust in this light, I trust that it will take care of me, does not mean that I will not, that this body will not die. Of course, this body will die. It does not mean that I will never have a klesha arise in this mind, an afflicted thought of greed, hate, or delusion. It doesn't mean that either. It doesn't mean I won't get sick and have a hard time. It doesn't mean that I might not be out on the street like Fai Yuan, having to sell my robe and bowl to pay back the debt to my kind supporters. It doesn't mean any of that, but it means that we will be completely supported without a robe and a bowl, without a place to live while we're sick, and even while we die. That's how I understand it.
Okay, well, that's the clarification.
Yeah. And truly supported, like supported by the light, in the light, as the light, because old age, sickness, and death are on their way. There, here they are, and there's no way to avoid them. But if we identify with the limited body and mind of birth and death, then we're not trusting the light. And then we, even though the light is filling us from head to toe. In a way, you could say, we will not be supported by the light. Right? So, without trusting it, right? This was the sentence. It was my sentence, right? If we trust the light, we will be supported by the light. We are being supported by the light, but we won't recognize how we're being supported by the light without trusting the light. Does that make sense?
It's a subtle and deep discussion.
Yeah. And trusting it so much that if we trust it completely, then it will be okay to go through old age, sickness, and death. Otherwise, it will... I say, if we don't trust the light, it will probably not be okay to go through old age, sickness, and death. It will be a great struggle. Even trusting the light, it might be somewhat of a struggle. If we trust the light somewhat, it will be somewhat of a struggle. If we trust the light completely, like the Buddha trusted the light completely. So my understanding is that there was a body there that went through old age, sickness, and death, but it was not a struggle for the Buddha because he completely trusted this light. We could say, but in identifying, what are we identifying with the light as our self, or something conditioned and impermanent as our self? Identify, and we also invest. We invest conditioned things with the power to obscure the light. No, we don't need to. Even truly, it's like the light invests, for example, emotions. That's maybe the main thing. I feel like that the light invests emotions with the power to obscure itself. Could you follow that? Doesn't it? The light invests emotions and thoughts and physical feelings too with the power to obscure itself, the light. That's also like a miracle beyond miracles. And a very painful miracle that the light can invest such power in such impermanent, kind of illusory displays to obscure itself. So, fortunately for us, today, Shakyamuni Buddha was born into this world system, a world of darkness, a world of confusion, a world of good times and bad times. And offered something new in this world, and it was so radiant that 2,500 years later, it's still radiating. So we celebrate the beginning, the first lion's roar. The birthday roar in the heavens above and in the earth below, in the 10 directions. I alone, only this self, Jikko Komyo, am the Buddha. So any wholesome seeds for to inspire our practice gathered during these gatherings and during the session, any positive aspirations, any discoveries, any deepening of trust, any wholesome deeds, any door openings, any gifts, any open hearts, any intentions of kindness. We gather together in front of us into a huge birthday cake, and light, the luminous candles, actually only one candle, with a radiant flame, and we then explode this cake. So bits and pieces of icing and crumbs are flung throughout all world systems, radiating into the east throughout countless billions of world systems, to the west, the north, and the south, to the zenith and the nadir, with bits of this grand birthday cake, and with the deep intention that may all beings throughout all world systems enjoy these morsels of birthday cake, imbibe them fully, digest them completely, and feel utterly and completely nourished. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.